Hi, and welcome to RevOps Unboxed, the podcast that dives into the world of revenue operations, brought to you by me, Sandy Robinson, in partnership with Revenue Operations Alliance. In each episode, we'll be unboxing the best practices, strategies, and real stories of revenue operations practitioners to help you optimize revenue operations, grow, and scale your organization. On today's episode of RevOps Unboxed, I'll be speaking with Manas Kulkarni, the Director of Revenue Operations at Spring Health. He'll be talking to us today about his interesting career journey.
Well, thank you for joining me today, yeah. Manas. I'm really excited to talk to you and got to hear a little bit about your perspective. So appreciate you joining RevOps Unboxed here to chit-chat a little bit about revenue operations. And, you know, so if you just want to start off by introducing yourself and tell a little bit, you know, just about what you're doing today, and then we'll get started.
Sure. Sounds good. First of all, thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. So my name is Manas. I lead a revenue operations team at a company called Spring Health, which is a mental health tech company helping people get the right care at the right time. And I've been there for 2 years now, and it's my second like RevOps experience. I got my start out of college and Teach for America, so I never thought I'd live in California, but found myself in the San Francisco Bay after spending all my life on the East Coast, and taught algebra, geometry, and stats for a couple of years. Amazing experience, difficult experience. It was a roller coaster, and I remember meeting up with my friends who were also marketing majors where I went to school and doing jobs in marketing and technology. And I was like, I really want to get back into this. And so found myself in sales at a company called Percolate, which is now acquired by Seismic, and did the SDR thing for a couple of years there. And then found myself at a company focused on market insights, CB Insights. Started as an SDR, and then like halfway through realized, you know, I'm having a lot more fun on like little process hacks and building models and like these things that were, I was doing in my free time. And it was around the time I was at a bar with some cousins, and there was this plaque in the background that said like, what you're doing in your free time is probably what you should be doing full time.
Right.
And a week later I went and talked to our head of sales ops at the time, Victor. And I said like, hey, what are the chances you'll adopt me on your team instead? And then slowly kind of made the case to transition from SDR to RevOps. And That was the first RevOps journey, and then followed my SVP of sales and CS at the time to Spring Health, where he became the CRO, was pretty much his first RevOps hire, and then built the team from the ground up.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I just need to unpack this.
You
a
wanted
little
a
bit.
More concise version, right?
I've got to unpack this a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Algebra.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty awesome. So you got your degree, a math degree, and you decided to teach math and stats and
actually
fun stuff.
It's funny. I think I like tried to do things differently, like majoring in like a statistics, computer science, some of that. I feel like so many people say that these days, but would have been awesome. No, but I majored in marketing and operations management. And now I've found myself in like, not marketing operations, but revenue operations. And so,
it's so
funny
it's,
full circle.
It was it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Right? It was meant to be.
That's what I tell myself now.
Yeah. I think it's great because you have that sales background, that SDR background, mm-hmm. and you really get that. You know, it's a lot of hard work, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot to do. There's a lot of tools to use, a lot of technology, and it's not easy. So having, I think, somebody on the RevOps side really understanding that, especially using the tools and all the things, is huge. How's that really helped you, do you think, in what you do today?
Yeah, I remember my first conversation with Victor, our head of sales ops. I was saying like, you know, I'm in the job right now. So if I'm designing solutions and fixing processes, I feel like I can really bring that empathy to the role. And at the time there was one other person who was a former SDR, but largely the team hadn't been in kind of an IC role before. And so that was my pitch, and that landed somehow. I think that's one part of it. The second part is, I'd like to think my communication skills have polished a little over time, but before sales, I remember a lot more rambling. And I think being an SDR and having to get a pitch down in a 15-second cold call, right, really forces you to choose the right words. And so in presenting a big process change or a rollout to a group of ICs, is can feel a bit daunting, especially if it's a change they're not excited about. And so really polishing up your talk track and the why is something that I really got from sales. And then the last, I think, and my favorite part, honestly, of the sales process, and if sales was just this, I'd probably still be doing it, is just that like discovery and sitting across the end of the table from someone and saying, what's hard today? Right. What are you dealing with? Why is that a pain? Right. And then figuring out like, hey, is that something that maybe we could help with? And so that is actually so much of what the job is now, and the job for many people on my team. So those are some of the things that come to mind first, as far as what I took.
I mean, that's huge. And as I'm sure you can relate to in building out your org, that internal selling is such an important skill for a RevOps leader.
Because
one, not everybody understands it in your organization, right? It sounds like you do have a very supportive organization, but having a little bit of people skills and that sales background, I think is really helpful.
Yeah.
I know, you know, I have a sales background as well, and it just, you know, kind of comes natural sometimes. It's
like
you're thinking about the customer and, you know, how all that works, both your internal. I heard you say our internal customers in your presentation earlier, and I thought that was really big and really, really important way to think about it as you're campaigning within your organization.
Yeah.
You know, getting that pitch down so that way you can really stay focused on the mission at hand with your, with your org.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is such a great path. And, you know, something that as you've been building out your org now, so you mentioned this is the first kind of, you know, full RevOps org that you built out from scratch. What are some of the initial challenges going into the role, making that transition from, you know, individual contributor and then over to like, you know, functional understanding, then really getting into this senior leadership role?
Yeah.
What have been some of the challenges for you in the transition?
Yeah. I'll go kind of like chronologically. So I think going from SDR to RevOps, I mean, there were some of the obvious things, like I wasn't ever really deep in the Salesforce backend. Probably would have blown some things up if I was doing that in SDR.
Yeah, I don't want to die.
So I think some of like the technical, you know, skill sets, both in terms of the tech stack and also just, you know, like modeling and analytics and how do you think about a business problem and using data to get to an answer recommendation. So those were just things that I hadn't really done much of before. And I actually like that's what I wanted more of. So, yeah, it was a challenge, but it was also really exciting. The other thing I think that I've talked to other SDRs now who want to move into RevOps is when you're an SDR, for better or for worse, you know exactly how you're doing at that time, right? It's so metrics driven. You have a quota, and you can say the same about like many quota carrying reps. But I think because, you know, activities and things on a much shorter time frame and things that are more repeatable are so pertinent to the SDR role. It's really like the clearest picture you have on like, am I performing against goal or not? Right.
Right.
Moving into a RevOps role, you're not carrying a quota, or you most likely probably aren't. And so how do you think about like measuring success and measuring your performance and your impact? And while I think a lot of, you know, great RevOps leaders will say like ultimately your North Star is the company revenue goal, and there's a lot of truth in that,
right?
But distilling that into like what are you directly impacting on a day to day, week to week, maybe month to month, is it's a little harder to draw that like immediate measurable connection. And so I think you know, not having that as clearly defined as I did in my SDR days was a bit of a shift for for sure.
Okay.
So that was kind of like phase one, and then I think phase two, in coming to like going from an IC within RevOps to leading a RevOps team. I mean, I could spend the next 25 minutes talking about mistakes, but I think some of the big ones are I mentioned in that presentation just now, but not thinking about who, but thinking about how. So like when a problem comes your way, you immediately jump to how am I going to get this thing done, rather than thinking of who is the right person on my team or maybe another team, right? Like to work on this thing. Made that mistake, still make that mistake a ton of times.
It's hard too sometimes because you know, you're like, oh, I've done this before.
Yeah.
I can crank it out and do it.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, I have a team and this is where you get an opportunity to teach and develop and, you know, work with them along the way. And then also give yourself, you know, the ability to really look at the strategy side and, you know, kind of make sure everything is working versus diving down the rabbit hole on, you know, digging into Salesforce and going like, you know, 20 clicks down, figure out like what's driving that problem, you know, and I kind of get into that data rabbit hole. Having good, strong people on your team to help you is sounds like what you've built.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, be remiss not to say like, it's fun, right? I'm a nerd, Sandy. So like the building the formula is really cool. And like, you know, that, so.
I mean, you taught statistics. You're applying it right now.
Yeah. I think the, like finding the right balance of anything like tech, you know, tactical execution and strategic thinking is probably the biggest like shift that I need to make in the area of like development for me. So definitely a challenge, especially when you're giving up the stuff that you really enjoy to an extent. Right. But exactly as you said, when you have the people on your team who are so much more capable than you, right. And in some of these domains, it's actually more harmful to like, not let them do the job. Because it, it's self-explanatory probably, but it, like you spend your time not where you should be spending your time. And the outcome is probably not as good as it would be if they had worked on it instead.
Exactly. Well, and there's that level of empowerment that you're developing with your team and it, having the ability to support them up, and they're going to make mistakes, right? We make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So giving them the ability to let them do that. Right. And obviously, you know, a somewhat controlled environment where it's not going to break everything. But I mean, I think that's huge because people learn, right? There are a lot of things that I've implemented that didn't work, and you learn from it, and you, you know, work with them to develop up. And so I think that's a great approach. It's okay. And something that I really, I saw with what you do and I really liked is just even the way that you run your team. So I love this idea. You're running your team. It looks like just really like, you know, you have a very open dialogue and you're getting a lot of feedback on how you're doing. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, how you're running your team with the weekly feedback and the way that you, you bring them all together. You have like 9 people on your team,
including myself,
including yourself. Okay.
Yeah.
So how does that go?
One of the first things I think about is actually something our own CFO said like a couple months ago about how her team at the company has some of the highest like engagement scores measured by like our quarterly survey. And one of the first things she said was, if you're like, if you open the door and you're vulnerable with your team, then like you'll be amazed by what comes back. And so I think that was that's a lesson I really took to heart. And so I think like even in the last few weeks, I can think of a couple meetings where like I told my team where I was really, really struggling. And not only like did they raise their hands to help and jump in, but then they started opening up, I think, about, you know, things that they've been struggling with. So I think one, just like the you setting the stage for the vulnerability is what like really unlocked a lot. That was one. The second thing that that we've been doing, there's a category of just like measuring this, right? And one thing we've been doing for a while and one thing that we just started recently. The one thing we've been doing for a while is our company uses Culture Amp. And so I've been putting all of our like one-on-ones in Culture Amp.
Oh, cool.
And they ask, they do like a weekly check-in. And it's like, you know, 1 through 5 basically on a few different things. How are you feeling overall, like outside of work, productivity, work relationships, so on. And my team's really good about filling those things out on a weekly just for in prep for one-on-one. And then there's a section there to elaborate on like what's going well and what's not. And that, it's funny, like we sometimes spend almost the entire one-on-one just digging into that. And that's been like a great recurring and frequent collection of data, right? And then the second thing that we put in place recently was this like weekly pulse check. And it's very similar to the one-on-one survey. But whereas the one-on-one survey can get very tactical, like, hey, I really need to talk to you about this project or so on, the weekly pulse check is just, hey, give me the like 40,000 foot view. How are you doing? 1 through 5, rate your work experience, like really positive, really negative. And then what were the things that impacted your score positively and then negatively?
Wow.
We've only been doing it for 2 weeks, but already like people have been sharing stuff because they know it's anonymous. And that's been really important. They've been sharing stuff that like, it does not come up organically in conversation, right? Even one-on-ones. It's been a great way for me to then go follow up privately with someone in a one-on-one. But it is also, if not a perfect science, at least somewhat of a barometer to know how the team is doing as a whole, right? And so we've been a 3.7 out of 5 the last 2 weeks. And now I can like see that visually.
Right.
And that's been really helpful as an operator, like having some metric tied to it is it helpful. Yeah.
But it's also a safe way for people to communicate.
Yeah.
And it's consistent too. Mm-hmm. They expect it. And it sounds like from everything that you're saying, you're not just sitting there and letting it go into a spreadsheet. You're actually doing something about it with them. And I think that's big. And I'm just curious, like, is this something you're going to try to roll out to your organization just from a RevOps and enablement function? I could really see you potentially bringing this to your sales leaders. And, you know, what if the rest of your org was running in that sort of discipline and have that building that culture, or are you already doing that?
Yeah. This is actually the first time I'm like talking about it outside of my team.
Okay.
I've been like trying to keep it a secret from the rest of the org.
This won't broadcast for probably a month.
Yeah.
A little bit of time.
Well, no, and the main reason is because like I wanted to stick with it and not just like
you want to prove it
exactly
success,
right.
Like
yeah.
You have what enough data 6 months or a year.
Exactly. So yeah, just do it. Even doing it for a month or you know 6 weeks to be able to show that there's a trend and that like what have I gotten out of this? We at Spring Health we have this like extended leadership team.
Okay.
It's a group of about like 40 individuals across 40 to 50 individuals. Like senior managers, director, VP level folks who are all across different functions in the company. We meet once a quarter, but we also have like a regular forum to, you know, share ideas and kind of pick each other's brains. And so I'm excited to, I think, share it in that group because I'm curious if other functions across the company are doing that.
Right.
One of the like mistakes that I've made is getting super pigeonholed in just the revenue org and like not borrowing enough, right, from these other teams. Sorry, I'm going down a rabbit hole.
No,
I'll be quick on this. Just like in the last ELT meeting, we had our head of data science was there and she was talking about how they have this sprint guardian. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept is like, in order to encourage, like,
scary.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow.
Exactly. Like for the stakeholders, because that person's job is literally like to guard everyone else's time and calendars.
Right.
And it's so fascinating. Like we work in sprints, but we don't necessarily have that concept of that.
Yeah. That's a real discipline.
Yeah. So excited to share it more broadly and see like what we could be doing better. But intentionally, I wanted to start with like, it's 3 questions.
Right.
It's super simple.
It has to be, or you can be able to keep it up consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and sprints are challenging, I think, too, especially if you're growing and rapidly changing organization.
You
want to be able to accommodate. So you want to be able to be agile. But at the same time, and when I say agile in the terms of flexible and to, you know, continuously improve.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a balance in saying, okay, well, we can, you know, it's important. We can only do this much in this, you know, sprint, this period of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, are there business needs that are, you know, percolating up and are there things we have to be flexible on? So I think there's a balance as you're in that growth, that fast growth to scale. And there is a point where you do have to be, I think, guardians.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But you also want to be helpful, right?
Yeah.
To be seen as a, hey, I can go to them. So I think there's always a balance, which is probably why some people they'll answer the Slack or something.
Yep.
And they'll do the request and it's tough. It's tough. It's always a balance. But I mean, this has been great. You really I think just in terms of people that are in revenue operations or looking to get in RevOps, or you know, I've been in revenue operations like forever I can think, and it, you know, I learned so much just from talking to you today and your presentation and ideas, and I think you're really bringing a great way to add a system, you know, bring a systematic approach to RevOps and really thinking about it as the team infrastructure for your, you know, organization and how you're thinking about what everybody does and you know, the roles and the responsibilities and everything. So you're doing great stuff, and I'm definitely want to hear more from you and
thanks.
What's going on. So do you have any closing thoughts or words of wisdom for the listeners out there?
Yeah, definitely don't feel like the wisest person in the room, but I think like in the spirit of this kind of transition from non-RevOps to RevOps, I think the advice that I got that stuck with me most was like, just go find the problems, right? Mm-hmm. Like find the problems and then do your best to fix the problems. And then when you show that you're thinking about it that way and like designing solutions empathetically, and like measuring impact, it becomes a lot easier, I think, to transition that, you know, naturally, rather than worrying too much about, should I get Salesforce certified, or like, should I become an Excel wizard, or you know, whatever it is. So I would encourage, like, make a list and sit down with the people who are kind of like going through these challenges, which really helped me in my own interview process, and like make the laundry list of the things that are really hard, and then pick a few things and kind of focus on like, hey, these are the ones where either A, I have experience, or I have curiosity, and I really want to like try and tackle this. And 99 times out of 100, I think the person who like had it on their list and doesn't have time for it will answer like, sure, go figure it out. Exactly. So I hope that's helpful. And it was definitely helpful to me. And it's something that comes up in conversations that I have with folks who are trying to break in.
Awesome. Thanks for joining. This was another episode of RevOps Unboxed. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Sandy.
Good seeing you.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to RevOps Unboxed. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.